The opinions expressed on the following sponsored program are strictly those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of this station, its staff, management, or sponsors.
Hello, and welcome to Florida Law Talk with attorneys Charles A. Moorhead III and Gary M. Singer. Florida Law Talk is a service of the Broward County Bar Association, 954-764-8310. Charles, our president, is a board-certified civil trial lawyer specializing in serious personal injury, wrongful death, legal malpractice, and more. Gary is a syndicated columnist appearing every Monday in the Sun Sentinel, a Florida board-certified real estate attorney, and also practices in civil litigation and contract law, and is chairperson of our real estate section. And now, here's today's show.
Hey guys, our second show.
Yeah,
new home.
Sure is.
Florida Law Talk Radio, presented by the Broward Bar Association and Alpine Jaguar. That's me. I'm the Alpine guy. And I've got three additional people at the desk. I've got Gary.
Hi, how you doing?
Got Charles.
Hey, Damien.
And I've got this guy, Alan Dance, from Dance and Kronogold. He's a employment lore kind of guy.
Hey, and Damien.
We've got some, I'm sure we can pick Alan's brain in some bizarre cases. We might have some current law and some changes and maybe some stuff that's going to impact people locally, people that are business owners, maybe those are employees.
You know,
I'm in the car business, so... You know, employment law is an everyday kind of action for us.
And they can call in if they like at 561-995-8255 or toll free at 888-721-0074 with their employment law questions. Charles, what's going on this week?
Well, Florida Law Talk is the people's show here in Broward County in South Florida, broadcast on 96.9. You can call in on the live show at 561-995-8255. I'm Charles Moorhead, the president of the Broward County Bar, and Gary Singer and I are going to host this show each Monday, currently between 3 and 4 p.m. live. And the bottom line of the show is we're trying to help the community. We're trying to educate folks, take questions that are salient and pertinent to the topics of the day. And we're also trying to have a little fun and let our members talk to the members of the public and really educate them about their specific area of the law. In this case, we have Alan Dance. Good afternoon, Alan.
Hey, Charles. How are you?
I'm great. So it says you're a PhD, a FUD after your name. What's your PhD in?
Yeah, somewhat unrelated to my initial practice of law, which is a second career for me. I had gotten my PhD some years ago from Purdue University in the area of hearing and balance disorders.
Really?
And had many years ago started what was then the largest privately held chain of hearing and balance laboratories in Southeast Florida, Dade Broward and Palm Beach County. We ultimately sold that business to a public company and asked my wife for permission to go to law school because it was something that I had
considered. Yeah, where'd that right turn happen?
Well, you know, I did this voluntarily. And, you know, unlike a lot of us, I think that end up in the profession that, you know, right after college. But I decided that it was something that I wanted to pursue. My wife gave me permission to do so, as long as it wasn't north of Orlando, because she's a native South Floridian. She didn't want to.
There are very few of us.
Very, very few.
Gotcha. So, and why'd you end up, after you got all that done, why'd you end up in going employment law?
So I was initially, when I first got out of law school, I was practicing in a big firm in South Florida. I was doing actually a lot of healthcare law. And just through the contacts at the big firm, ended up practicing with my mentor, who's no longer with us today, a gentleman by the name of Henry Latimer, who was a
great lawyer.
Yeah,
great friend.
Yeah, and I think the first African-American judge in Broward County. Great guy. And he trained me in the area of labor and employment just by chance.
And it stuck. You're still here.
I'm still here.
Yeah. You know, I thought T.J. Redick was the first black judge in Broward County. Is that not true?
That's not what Henry told me, but I'll go with whatever you say.
If anyone knows, call in. You know, one of the things we were talking about before we got on the air, this is Gary, is that lawyers are people outside. It seems like sometimes when I meet with clients, they're amazed that I have a sense of humor or there's something going on. We were talking before, Charles, what a lot of people don't know, is big into airboats. You just hooked up a new airboat, right, Charles?
That's true, buddy. It's true.
Tell us about this
beast. My 44th year running airboats in Florida.
44th year. So you were out in the Everglades all weekend.
All those years,
tooling around.
Absolutely.
That's great. What about you, Alan?
No,
what do you do? No airboats. What kind of airboat do you have, Alan? Now, what do you do when you're not, saving people's businesses?
Yeah, so my wife and I like to travel a good deal. So, we try to do our trips both throughout the United States and Europe.
You got one of those RVs?
No.
I got to get one of those.
Not a bad idea.
They're pretty plush.
Not a bad idea. Right, it's a second home.
Jaguar's going to make one soon, actually.
Oh, yeah.
The Jaguar RVX.
I'll get you the little leaping cat for the hood. Like I'll do that for you. I'm that kind of guy.
All right.
We'll spiff it up.
Jaguar mobile
there
home.
There you go.
Like
and what about you, Damien? What do you do?
I have two young kids, so I'm my weekends are all sports all the time right now. You know, we're out here playing lacrosse right now. Fall lacrosse season's about to kick off, so it's all about snipers lacrosse right now.
Yeah, no fooling. Two young kids takes up a ton of your time.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And so, my kids, fortunately, are starting to get into golf, so I can go golfing with them, which is one of my two big
hobbies,
as well as target shooting. And so it's great to be able to do something, not the golf part with them, not yet the target shooting, but the golf part. So it's nice. But what's the hot topic in labor law?
What's new?
Oh, gosh. So lots of things that are hopping in the area.
Well, it's employment, right?
Yeah, I mean, the labor
part. Labor laws, unions.
Yeah, labor laws, union. I represent some local law enforcement agencies here in Broward County, and there are collective bargaining agreements, and I work with them on those issues that arise in the form of a grievance.
On that issue, okay, so we got all these people, and forget the high schoolers, but in professional sports, taking a knee instead of standing up. Are they allowed to do that under their contract?
You know, I haven't seen the contract, of course, so I can't say with absolute certainty. But my understanding is that under their collective bargaining agreement, in the NFL, they may, whereas in the NBA, they cannot. So I think it's a function of what's sort of dictated in that operative agreement.
So this wouldn't be a First Amendment issue. It really is a contractual issue.
It's probably both.
They better be glad that I didn't sign their agreement.
Oh. Well, yeah, I mean, something like that, that people could take a look at it, that they're doing something derogatory, which a lot of people are. What is it? I mean, would that be under that clause? Because I know they all have clauses that they can't misrepresent or represent poorly of the NFL. Wouldn't that kick in if too many people took offense to this?
Yeah, I mean, I guess in theory it could. I think it's sort of, the way I understand it, pretty broadly defined. So I think it gives a lot of latitude under the NFL's collective bargaining agreement. But again, I've not seen that document, so I can't say.
No, of course not. It's all. It's
all right, well, Alan, we got a phone call here. Woo-hoo! From Carlos.
Hi, Carlos.
Hey, how are you?
Good afternoon. Hey, we're having trouble hearing you. Speak up just a little bit.
Can you hear me well?
I can hear you, Carlos. Go ahead.
Great. I have a civil case in the federal court against my former employer.
You have a civil case against your former employer?
In federal court.
Correct. And we got summary judgment granted to them.
Quite common.
I appealed to the 11th Circuit as a pro se party. I don't have money for attorneys, so I had to take this by myself. So I appealed twice to the 11th Circuit. The 11th Circuit Court of Appeal just last week on the 7th issued an order saying that my motion to reinstate the appeal under the extraordinary circumstances rule was denied. And then also there is a sentence on the letter saying that this court shall accept no future filings in this closed appeal. The clerk is directed to discard any future submissions received from either party.
All right, so Carlos, here's the deal. We don't give legal advice on the show. We talk about things generically and in theoretical situations, but what we can say is this. A summary judgment in an employment law case is quite common, particularly in the Southern District of Florida. I'm not surprised that you lost down here below. I'm certainly not surprised that you were not sophisticated enough, apparently, to navigate the rules at the 11th Circuit in Atlanta, and they've thrown your case out forever and directed that no filings be accepted. Unfortunately, the federal courts can do that. It's pretty draconian, bad stuff, but it sounds like you're out of luck.
Does this mean that my next resource will be to appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court?
You have nothing to appeal. There's no decision. You have no vehicle of getting it there, in my opinion, so I don't know how you would do that, but theoretically, I suppose so, but I think you'd be wasting your time and your money. It's probably time to move on.
One of the things about civil cases is that there does have to be an end of it sometimes, that you can only go so far. Of course, we're not telling you what to do or what not to do, so if you feel like the need to do that, but I do recommend there are some very low-cost legal solutions you can reach out to, including our lawyer referral service. You'll hear the number in a minute, and legal aid, if that's the situation. But thank you very much for calling in. Any other calls, please call in. We'll see what we can do to help you out.
It's 561-995-8255.
Perfect. Alan, so we were talking about you were going to buy us dinner. No, wait. What were we talking about?
Let's go. It's dinner.
That's it. It's almost happy hour here.
Yeah. Well, on that note, we're going to take a quick break.
In one minute.
And we're going to take a quick break in 1 minute. So we're just going to count from 60 to 1 slowly. 60, 59. No, we're going to talk about some hot things. We were talking about football, taking any. What about a coach? If a coach gets offended, can he fine them? Or is that all? I mean, what rights do people have?
Well, if we're talking about
in general terms,
outside of the labor context and into the world of employment law, where there's no collective bargaining agreement. So, you know, keeping in mind that in most cases in the state of Florida and really throughout most of the United States, most employees are at will, and what that means is when you're at will is that you as an employee can be terminated for any reason, good reason, bad reason, no reason. You can quit for any reason, good reason, no reason, bad reason, with or without notice. You just can't be terminated because of some protected classification that either the federal or state law guarantees. So you cannot be terminated if it's based on your race, your age, your, you know, national origin, pregnancy, things like that. Those are protected federal and state law classifications.
Gotcha. On that note, we'll take a break and we'll be right back.
Almost all of us will find ourselves in need of legal advice or representation at some point. Finding the right lawyer can be a daunting task. The Broward County Bar Association is not a law firm. It's a not-for-profit organization formed in 1925 to foster courtesy, ethics, and professionalism among Broward County lawyers, to educate citizens on their legal rights, and to provide necessary legal services to Broward County residents. With over 3,200 members, the Broward County Bar Association can connect you with the right attorney for any legal need. Access is simple by phone, in person, or online, and our staff can aid you in English, Spanish, or Creole. All attorneys are fully insured, and consultations are available at little or even no cost to you. Don't guess, or simply follow an ad. Get a referral you know you can count on by contacting the Broward County Bar Association. Our phone number is 954-764-8310. That's 954-764-8310, or reach us online at browardbar.org. When it comes to legal representation for your business, you need an expert. Alan Danz is the founder and managing partner of Danz and Kronengold Fiel, a boutique labor and employment firm. Alan has vast hands-on business experience and is uniquely qualified to know the business of your business. He represents businesses and business owners only to protect their interests by ensuring compliance with the complicated maze of labor and employment laws and defending them in employment litigation disputes. Get the legal help your business needs from an attorney who understands your business. Call Alan Danz at 954-530-9245. That's 954-530-9245. Or go to danslaw.net for more information.
Hi, this is Gary Singer. We're back from break. Thank you for being with us. We're here today with our special guest, Alan Danz, and Charles Moorhead, and Damien from Jaguar as well.
Woohoo!
Sorry, Phil.
I know, by the back of the bus, and I'm sitting right across the table.
Wasn't on purpose, Phil. Don't call. I mean, call me, but don't call me to yell at me about that one, buddy. Anyway, we were talking off air about Charles. Really big fan of the $15 an hour minimum wage hike. So when that happens, and they're going to give you a couple of months to go in if that happens, can an employer, if they don't feel they can afford to keep lots of people, you were talking about, Will, can they start laying people off to kind of make up for that and keep their budget in line? Or would that be a bad reason to fire someone? I mean, not bad, you know, morally. I mean, legally.
Yeah, again, getting back to where we sort of left off, that, you know, most employees are at will and can be terminated for any reason, not the least of which is if an employer is unable to meet the bottom line and be able to afford employees as the minimum wage goes up, that's a big deal, and that would give that employer the basis to terminate somebody.
It's just an expense.
It is an expense, and the key thing, of course, is to do it, you know, even-handedly and across the board, so you're not just selecting minorities for termination. You know, you have to have, if you're going to lay off more than a person because of performance, it's good to have a basis for doing it. Maybe it's the, you know, the last one in is the first one out in some sort of, you know.
So it should be an objective standard.
It should when you're doing layoffs, right? If you're terminating people for performance, you know, it's good. And one of the things I always preach to my business clients is, you've got to document. Documentation is so important, because if somebody comes back at you, a former employee, and says, I really believe that this had something to do with my pick a protected class, age, race, sex, gender, pregnant, whatever, and you have legitimate business reasons documented, if challenged, that puts the employer in a very good defensible position. And, you know, we live in a pretty litigious society.
That's an understatement.
It is an understatement. There are lots and lots of employment cases. And one of the biggest, Gary, you know, which starts to touch upon this about the 15-hour minimum wage, is the fact that under the same law, the Fair Labor Standards Act, and we're talking minimum wage is really based on state law, but under the Fair Labor Standards Act, which governs the payment of overtime to employees, as of December 1st, the threshold test for otherwise exempt white-collar professionals, executives, administrators, and professionals, is going up almost double. So
it's huge.
The average salary of
hang on, you're talking Chinese. What do you explain to us what you mean?
So
let's talk about overtime and break that.
Yeah,
down.
So,
that's from the guy who just said draconian.
Yeah, yeah, and thanks for pointing that out, Charles. So look, most employees are what's called non-exempt. They have to get paid.
Let's call them regular.
Well, you can regular employees. Normally, they're often referred to as hourly employees, though that's not the legal standard. But if you use more of the common parlance or the common language, the hourly worker is supposed to get paid under, and President Obama has, you know, reiterated this, a fair day's pay for a fair day's work. And so if you're being paid an hourly rate, you are supposed to be getting paid overtime for every hour you work over 40 at time and a half. So if you're getting paid $10 an hour and you're working 45 hours, after 40 hours, those last 5 hours, you should be getting paid at $15 an hour, time and a half. The $10 plus the premium halftime rate. Making sense?
Gotcha.
You made 60 extra bucks. If you work 5 hours over 40, you make 10 bucks an hour. I can do that.
You're making 15 bucks an hour for those extra 5 hours.
Right.
So what's happening, though, is for those current employees, let's call them what I would call the exempt from the overtime, or in common parlance, it's often referred to as the salaried workers.
The muckety-mucks.
The muckety-mucks, who are the supervisors, the administrators, the office managers, the chefs, who are professionals or who are executives who are not entitled to overtime. So long as, up until this coming December 1st, as long as they were making $455 a week, then they were cool. They didn't get overtime. But now President Obama has pushed the Department of Labor, and it's now been adopted and promulgated and passed as law. And so as of December 1, that $455 a week is going up to $913 a week. That's a huge doubling.
Gross salary.
Gross. 450 gross to 913 gross.
So that's in a nutshell, if somebody makes 913 or less,
that'd be about 50,000 bucks a year.
So it's about
46,000.
It's almost $48,000 a year, just under.
So if someone makes less than that.
So if someone makes less than that,
good thing for them.
Right. So if they now make less than that, where they were previously not entitled to overtime, that exemption is going to be lost, and those same administrators, supervisors, managers are now going to be entitled to overtime. So employers are going to have to start making some serious decisions. They're either going to have to raise their salary up to that threshold of, say, almost $48,000 a year, or they're going to have to reclassify them now as hourly or non-exempt workers and allow them to work the overtime, which is going to be a big hit to the bottom line of that business.
Sure.
Or three, they're going to have to reclassify them and then somehow find ways not to allow those workers who were previously working more than 40 hours to limit them to 40 hours.
Well, they can hire more people and work less hours.
They can hire more people. That may affect benefits at, well, to the company.
Hire more people and pay them less.
Right.
Hire
right.
more people.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. Well, but you also have to consider when a business does that, there's about a 28% plus cost of benefits if you're hiring full-time well, exactly. people.
Yeah, the benefits cost goes
so,
nuts.
So it's unless you start hiring part-time people, which is another option for businesses looking to
be well, sure, they cut this person down to 40. You know, if they're working 50 hours a week, making $500 a week, $10 an hour, now they cut them down to 38, they're making $380 a week, and bring in someone else who's going to work 20 hours a week at the $10 an hour, and this person makes less, that other person now has a crappy part-time job, and everyone loses.
And
sounds
you know,
great.
One of the things that comes up often, though, is...
But Obama wins, it's all good.
Well, yeah, as long as he can market well,
the,
up on
the,
his
I think one of the
board.
Other big problem with that is, and I can speak from, you know, my business at an auto dealer, is that... finding skilled workers is challenging, and we have and always do. I think our store particularly is probably at the top end of the scale for skills, even on the hourly side, because it's so difficult. These people are not interchangeable. You just can't find another tech that's that good.
But that's not really who this is going to affect. I mean, most I don't know what mechanics make, but I mean, I'm you know, a lot of them I'm sure are making above the $46,000 a year.
Absolutely.
Mark. Most of them, five of them, according to our producer. Oh, 5 minutes.
So where is this, like, what feedback have you gotten?
I think employers, businesses yeah. are not happy about it, obviously.
Okay. Because,
and this, you know, affects really a lot of small businesses that are barely making their bottom line
right.
and feeding their families and also trying to take care of their workers. And so it's an issue. And
well, that's the point. This is so cute when you're General Electric or GM, you know, whatever. But when you have, 10 people working in your business
right.
and it's hard enough to push it, now you got to make these decisions.
Yeah, you don't have enough margin.
You're going to go out of business.
To cover it.
You know, or whatever. You know, you probably go out of business or let go of somebody, let go of the quality of the service, whatever. Yeah. It's not, you know, it's less of a big deal in big companies.
You know, in theory, the Fair Labor Standards Act, which is what we're talking about, generally, and there are some exceptions, generally covers... employers or businesses that are doing $500,000 in gross revenues per year. But that still encompasses a lot of, relatively speaking, it's a lot of small businesses.
I thought
that
it also had a numerical employee thing, like 15 employees or 30 or 50. Or
no, and you're right, Charles. I mean, that magic number 15 applies to a lot of the employment laws, mm-hmm. not, however, to the Fair Labor Standards Act. That is just a matter of whether or not you're hitting revenue and whether or not you're in some way engaged in interstate commerce, meaning goods are passing across state lines.
It's almost impossible not to be.
It's, you know, we learned that early in law school and yeah. constitutional law. Everything is engaged in interstate commerce.
And I'm sure a lot of businesses are going to start paying more people under the table.
So what's the story here? If I own a business and somebody brings a claim against me saying I'm no longer exempt, I want my overtime. Is it going to be a federal court case, state court? How's it work?
Yeah, there's jurisdiction for both state and federal courts, what we call concurrent jurisdiction. And most of these cases do end up in federal court, which is what I like, because I'm comfortable in that arena. I've done state court cases as well, but I like the formality of the federal court system.
You like the conservative nature of the federal
court. I do. That goes hand in hand with my legal nature, if not my personal
good
nature.
Good way to put them in a box, right. Carl. Good.
Exactly.
Let's call it truthful now. So,
yeah.
So are there fees awarded in these cases?
Yeah, and that's what drives, of course, a lot of these Fair Labor Standard overtime cases is the fact that there's an attorney's fee provision to the prevailing plaintiff. Okay. Not to the prevailing
so
defendant.
So if the plaintiff loses, the defense doesn't get their fees?
Typically not. It would have to be, you know, something...
Heads I win, tails you lose.
Correct.
Okay.
It's sort of a... I don't want to sound like any politician. It's sort of a rigged system if you think of it that way.
Well, it's also...
It sounds deplorable.
There's a big disparity in bargaining power.
Thank you for charming in, Charles.
Deplorable. I mean, you know, I get the aspect. There's a little bit of unfairness, but at the same time, a lot of these are, you know, wealthier corporations, and a lot of these are minimum wage folk that don't have the money to hire an attorney unless there was something like this.
I mean, if I was an employee and I had this coming down, I mean, I have lots of neighbors and friends who are employees who work their tails off to get the overtime that they get right now. And, you know, that's...
And let me
put another side of the coin.
Yeah, and let me put it in perspective. In the South Florida and the federal court system of South Florida, which is the, you know, Monroe, Dade, Miami-Dade, Broward, Palm Beach, in the number of overtime federal lawsuits filed, the Southern District of Florida, those counties that I just mentioned, lead the entire United States, as of last year, led the entire United States in the number of filings.
Yeah,
pretty mind-boggling.
There's your sign.
And it's not close.
It's not close. Yeah. And we're not a particularly blue-collar industrial community, so it really is mind-boggling.
The truth is, the truth is that there are many migrant-type workers, illegal people. I know today is the cause celeb is undocumented, but illegal workers who are trying to get paid what they're doing owed, and their people aren't paying them properly.
Yeah.
And that's the truth.
And they're
in South Florida.
It is. And it's also widespread in, we're a service industry down here in South Florida.
Sure.
So in the hotel, restaurant businesses, construction businesses, but almost every aspect. And it's not only the private lawsuits. Because of President Obama's initiatives with the Department of Labor, there are widespread audits where a Department of Labor investigator walks into your business, shines his or her badge, and says, I want to see your books.
What about them? If you're a government worker and you don't get overtime, can you sue the government?
Well, let's come back to that in just a minute. We're going to take a short break.
Introducing the all-new Jaguar F-Pace. The first SUV from Jaguar is inspired by the Jaguar F-Type. It comes with 380 horsepower and is built on lightweight aluminium architecture for incredible agility and handling, not to mention head-turning looks. The Jaguar F-Pace also has all of the conveniences of a luxury SUV with space for five and plenty of versatile storage. And now, all Jaguar models are protected by Jaguar Elite Care, best-in-class coverage for up to 5 years or 60,000 miles. So even though your lifestyle demands a practical car, with a Jaguar F-Pace, you still get to enjoy real performance when you drive. Purchase the all-new 2017 Jaguar F-Pace, starting price MSRP $42,390. Price excludes administration fees, taxes, license, and other fees. Retailer price, terms, and vehicle availability may vary. For complete details, visit Alpine Jaguar or call 954-598-7900.
Charles Moorhead III is a partner at Abramowitz, Pomerantz, and Moorhead, PA. With over 30 years of experience, he specializes in serious personal injury and wrongful death, traumatic brain injury, legal malpractice, and medical malpractice. Mr. Moorhead is board certified in civil trial law, listed in the best lawyers in America for personal injury, and is president of the Broward County Bar Association. Get your injury questions answered. Call Charles Moorhead III at 954-572-7200 or go to FloridaInjuryLawyers.com.
Well, welcome back to Florida Law Talk, the Broward County Bar Association's new radio show. You can reach us here on the air right now by calling 561-995-8255. I'm Charles Moorhead with Gary Singer, and we got Damian Polgar here from Alpine Jaguar, and Alan Danz of Danz and Chronogold is our guest. We're talking about labor law, and we were just getting into government issues that Gary was going to confront.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that the government being, I think, the largest employer in the galaxy now, probably has some of these same problems of not paying people what they're due. Can you sue the government, or are they immune from their own regulations?
No, you can sue the government. I mean, certain things they are immune from, obviously, but not the payment of overtime. And they find ways by using taxpayer money to make sure that the employers are classified properly. And by the way, one of the things that really comes up a lot, Gary, sort of going down the issue of who gets paid overtime and who doesn't, and this has been a widespread problem in South Florida as well, is employers trying to save money by classifying workers as independent contractors.
Yeah.
That's a huge area for a number of reasons, not only the overtime issues, but now because of the Affordable Care Act, as sometimes referred to as Obamacare, and the threshold number of employees before that gets triggered and you have to start, supplementing and paying for health care premiums. So, Alan,
how do we know who's an employee and who's an independent contractor?
How do you qualify?
Since you started the Obamacare thing, I'm going to finish it.
An excellent question I thought you'd never ask. So,
he teed that up for you a little bit.
Yeah, thank you. Softball pitch.
Yeah.
I'm ready to hit it. So how do you determine? So let's start with the basic idea that in the state of Florida, as in most states in the country, every worker is automatically presumed to be an employee.
Okay.
That's a presumption that exists in the law, certainly in the state of Florida. It's a rebuttable presumption, which means the employer can come back with information to say, no, they really are an independent contractor, and here's why. And the key thing with an independent contractor is the name may really imply is that the worker is truly independent. So
control.
And you hit it nail on the head, Charles.
Because I'm good like that.
You are good like that.
So you can't call your cashier.
Charles the Hammer Moorhead.
I can pack and go home now.
So you can't 1099 your cashier.
You probably cannot. You know, and it really, so for example, the IRS has a 20-factor test. The Department of Labor has a 10-factor test.
Simple.
The workers' comp, unemployment, all these state and federal agencies have different factors, but all come down to, if you summarize it all, to one word, applause to Charles, control. That is really the key thing. If I can control the worker, even if I don't, but I can exercise control if I wanted to, they're my employee. And so I'm dealing now with the Department of Labor audit for a business. And, you know, the Department of this business, fortunately or unfortunately, classified their workers as independent contractors. They came and went as they want. Department of Labor comes in and they say, yeah, they're all employees. And you sit there and you explain to them why there's no control by the employer. And they go, yeah, but they're all employees. Now, you want to litigate against the Department of Labor, who has, in theory, sort of unlimited government funding to fight you? And the answer is it's very tough for most businesses to do that. So it's just this really difficult problem. And so if you want to sleep at night, classify your worker as an employee.
Ready to pay the extra 16% or whatever it is.
That goes with it.
For taxes and Medicare and Social Security.
Pay me now or pay me later if you get, sued or the Department of Labor walks into your office or the IRS does. So
if someone's getting hosed, okay, so you got a young lady who's a waitress, right?
Really?
Hosed? So it's a technical term.
It's a legal term, as I understand it.
It's a legal term. But in pleadings, right? If someone's getting hosed, they're a waitress and they're not getting paid their due. They're working 50 hours a week. They're only getting their, $3.28 or whatever it is. They're getting, not getting the tip share. They're not getting their overtime. What do they do? They need the job. What do they do?
Right. Well, so that's a tough situation for that worker, right? So, and I deal with this a lot, where an employee ends up going and either filing suit or they find an attorney and they get a demand letter off to the employer.
But isn't the first thing that's going to happen, they're going to lose their job?
So you're leading up to the real
It's a twist. Retaliatory firing, though.
Correct.
Yeah, that's where it goes wrong.
So, all of a sudden, you have a bigger problem because now you've terminated that. How dare that employee sue me? You may even settle that case. And now you say, well, the heck with her or him. I'm now going to terminate them. And it follows on the heels of either the settlement or the ongoing litigation. And now you've bought yourself a bigger problem as the employer, because now you've got as Charles said, a retaliation claim, which is covered under the Fair Labor Standards Act, among other employment laws.
So what do you do as the employer?
Well, either you're on your best behavior going forward, or often what I do is I craft a settlement which allows for the exit of that employee as well. Because if that employee stays in the job after there's been a resolution to the lawsuit or the threatened lawsuit, and you've, even with legitimate business reasons, terminate that employee somewhere.
It's on like Donkey Kong. It's on. The fight's coming.
You're fair game. It's almost easier. Pay a premium now, right. and cut your losses and move on.
So far, people have gotten hosed, and we're playing video games here on the Broward Bar Association.
We do that.
We're keeping it real.
That's it.
Right?
So that's like a no-win situation.
It's a no-win situation.
Let's talk about the average employee. Let's say I'm a nurse at a hospital in a supervisory position, and I get some free health care, as an example, from the hospital, my friend, and I'm terminated after that happens, and I want my job back, and I don't think I was treated right, and there was no progressive discipline. What's the reality of that?
Well, the reality is, and this gets back to the issue of how many employees you have to have as an employer, number one, to be covered under these anti-discrimination, anti-harassment
claims. They have thousands. Let's say they had thousands.
Yeah, right, so the threshold is 15 or more.
Okay.
Under federal and state law, 15 or more, and you're pretty much a covered employer under the Florida Civil Rights Act or Title VII, under the Federal Civil Rights Act. So you're covered at that point. if, and again, you can terminate an employee for any reason at all. It just can't be related, and I may have
missed.
It
can't be for the wrong reason, wrong class.
It can't be for the wrong class. It could be for a bad reason. I don't like you. I don't like the perfume you wear.
You're too good
looking. I don't like the cologne.
That happened to me once.
Yeah, you're ugly.
I got fired for being too good looking.
Yeah.
Deep.
I mean, you can fire somebody for any reason. It just can't be based on one of the protected classes.
Let me take that and make a left turn.
Yeah.
So let's take Charles' example. He works for a big employer hospital. Hundreds of employees in a building. They've got their employee manuals. They've got their employee standards. They've got an HR department that's armed to the teeth. Now,
class 3 drugs.
Right. And I know some people work for big hospital groups, and they bend over backwards and follow this progression of events.
Discipline. Progressive discipline.
Okay, right. Okay, progressive discipline to fire somebody. Is that progressive discipline part of the manual? Is that part of the HR department? Like, how does that differ from what you were talking about, how people can just be fired for any reason?
Yeah, so that's a great question, and thanks for that, Damien. But the reality is, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
The reality is, I've been doing this a long time, so I'm a big proponent of less is more. And when you start dealing with employee handbooks,
right,
and you start dealing with policies and procedures, I believe it's difficult to manage, especially large groups of people, when you have so many policies in place. Inevitably, some manager or supervisor is not going to follow a particular policy because it's so unwieldy and so many policies. And then all of a sudden, there's an inference in the law, a presumption in the law, that if you didn't follow your own policy, particularly with one person, but you did with another person, there's this inference of what's called disparate treatment, treating certain people differently than other people. And if they happen to fall into a protected class over the age of 40 for age, race, gender, sex, national origin, military status.
Did you just say over the age of 40?
40 and above, technically.
I'm a protected class. That's seriously? Cool.
40 and above.
Cool.
So that's a good – I'm glad you kind of said that because, you know – Charles' example again, you know, let's say an x-ray tech in a hospital breaks the x-ray machine, a $100,000 machine, he
gives a free x-ray to the buddy.
Or that's fine, and you know, the guy who runs the department goes, you're a bozo, you're out of here.
Yeah.
Just like that.
All is fair.
Right. And now the hospital has this whole, you know, three disciplinary actions and all these procedures that were obviously not filed, then what?
Well, that's one of the nice things about working for a large employer is they do have some protections that are built in. They have more due process, if you will, than the law requires. And that's their absolute right to do so.
It's their total right to do so. It's that often I see it go sideways or amiss because someone didn't follow a particular protocol and a particular policy of that particular handbook. And that's why I tend to say less is more. Have less policies that you can police much more easily as the employer and treat everyone the same. And it's easier to do than having 1,000 policies, which, you know, you're running. And I'm not a big, and I've counseled thousands of employers and businesses, I'm not a big believer in progressive discipline. I think the employer, you know, we're talking about a private sector employer, has the right to terminate or discipline any worker for any reason, again, it's not part of the protected reasons, without having to say, well, this is your first time, let's not do it again. I mean, sometimes it's
Alan, that's just mean.
Yeah.
You're a bully.
I'm a hard line guy. Absolutely. I am a PhD. And damn proud of it.
We have no idea.
Hey, Alan, so what's the craziest? We got about 3 minutes before our next break. What's the craziest employer-employee situation you've seen, like the most outlandish thing.
Is where it gets good.
Most outlandish thing you saw an employer do.
This is where we start talking about the cheetah.
Yeah,
there
you go. Hiring practices.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the most, you know, the lurid ones are the ones involving sexual harassment in the workplace.
Well, let's look at Mr. Ailes and our good friends up there at the Fox 20 mil. Broadcast.
Yeah, we need ratings over here. 20 mil. Chime in, Alan. We're looking for ratings.
Well, Gretchen, what was her name? Gretchen? 20 mil was the settlement.
Million.
Yep.
Wow. So I mean, I'm indirectly involved with one case right now where a particular employer was putting ads out for employees on Craigslist, and this employer had a full bedroom in the back of his office.
That's phenomenal.
Okay, which, listen, maybe the guy just got tired frequently. Who am I to say? I mean,
he's a nap guy, like
happens.
Hillary.
You get older, you need rest, you know, whatever.
Working late, you know,
it's
you don't
not
want to go
good
home.
When the engineer on the other
working
side of the glass
late
is shaking his head.
I think he said something else, but in any event.
Working late, you know,
and so,
you got a court in the morning.
You yeah,
need
you, know,
a place
you need to take a little
up.
Nap or yeah. whatever, and apparently he
was it a water bed?
He would, I wasn't familiar with the mattress type.
You're so retro, Gary.
You know, I'm old fashioned.
But he would then make, he would, I'm trying to keep this clean for the audience.
Oh, that's okay. He was interviewing folks.
He was interviewing folks
turning
without
that
any
into
clothes
a bedroom
on.
Soiree.
Without any clothes on.
Really?
And his hands would wander to different parts of his own body.
Wow.
And this would
sounds
become
like
part of the job
guy.
Description. I mean, that's pretty lurid.
And all that to drive a truck?
All that to drive a truck. Yeah.
Just seems like still, it can't
be still trying to find the relationship
just,
between
you know,
the job
I just want to run a backhoe. Put your clothes on.
Yeah, oh, we're still getting thrown off the air.
Yeah, that's pretty
I
so.
Love it.
And how did he get busted? No pun intended.
Yeah. Well, what happens typically is, you know, there are some employees who comply with those type of situations because they need a job and they're afraid to lose their job. But ultimately, someone outs that person and they go complain. They go talk to a lawyer. They go talk to some governmental agency. And then it's showtime. And there's a lawsuit or a demand letter before that. And these things get aired not only in court, but in the court of public opinion. And it's really nasty for those people involved in those cases.
I wonder if they were all forced to use the same bathroom.
Oh, jeez.
There was this. I don't think he's talking about Target.
We don't have any political disclaimers for this show.
We're going to break right up. Back yeah. to Florida Law Talk and the Broward Bar.
Get us out of here.
Gary M. Singer is a Florida board-certified real estate attorney. Mr. Singer practices in real estate, civil litigation, and contract law from his office in Sunrise and owns Gibraltar Title in Fort Lauderdale. He is the chairperson of the Broward County Bar Association and sits on its board of directors. Gary writes a weekly syndicated column appearing locally every Monday in the Sun Sentinel. Contact Gary at the law firm of Gary M. Singer, PA, for your free consultation. 954-851-1448 or go to GarySingerLaw.com. Almost all of us will find ourselves in need of legal advice or representation at some point. Finding the right lawyer can be a daunting task. The Broward County Bar Association is not a law firm. It's a not-for-profit organization formed in 1925 to foster courtesy, ethics, and professionalism among Broward County lawyers, to educate citizens on their legal rights, and to provide necessary legal services to Broward County residents. With over 3,200 members, the Broward County Bar Association can connect you with the right attorney for any legal need. Access is simple by phone, in person, or online, and our staff can aid you in English, Spanish, or Creole. All attorneys are fully insured, and consultations are available at little or even no cost to you. Don't guess, or simply follow an ad. Get a referral you know you can count on by contacting the Broward County Bar Association. Our phone number is 954-764-8310. That's 954-764-8310, or reach us online at browardbar.org. When it comes to legal representation for your business, you need an expert. Alan Danz is the founder and managing partner of Danz & Kronengold Fiel, a boutique labor and employment firm. Alan has vast hands-on business experience and is uniquely qualified to know the business of your business. He represents businesses and business owners only to protect their interests by ensuring compliance with the complicated maze of labor and employment laws and defending them in employment litigation disputes. Get the legal help your business needs from an attorney who understands your business. Call Alan Danz at 954-530-9245. That's 954-530-9245. Or go to danslaw.net for more information.
Alan, thanks a lot. I never thought that'd be the way you'd get away with that. We were just talking off the air, but we're not going to go into that on air.
Oh,
but I
can.
Appreciate that advice.
Live a little. Take a walk on the wild side.
So we were talking about the back of Alan's office and how he had it set up.
Please, my wife, Gary, is listening to this show. Please.
Right. As Gary chimes in for the afternoon.
Well, I know we had a lawyer on last time about that sort of stuff, if you need help.
Yeah, okay. Family lawyer. Got it. I'm aware.
So, no, this is, Damon, you actually had a question that was really pretty good on the break. So, yeah.
I don't even remember.
That's all right.
I think we're trying to shift gears actually a little bit. So, you wanted to chime. We were talking off the air, and I think you wanted to talk about another big scam that comes in down here a lot.
Fake injuries.
Yeah, fake injuries.
Well, not.
No,
not fake injuries, but.
Disabilities.
ADA stuff.
Yeah.
With people coming into a business.
Denied access for supposed disability.
Right. Yeah, okay. Denied access for supposed disability.
Right, and just so we're clear, I'm not necessarily saying that they're scams, however. So there is a...
Disclaimer noted.
Yeah, thank you. There's a large number of lawsuits. We talked about the Fair Labor Standards Act, and now we're sort of shifting gears about something that affects businesses a lot.
I make right turns a lot, you know.
I did notice that, and it seems to be working very effectively.
I know.
So,
one more right turn, I'm out of the studio.
I'm going to be making a left.
So this is when someone goes in, and then they end up bringing a lawsuit against a business because they're not compliant with ADA.
Correct. So I'm a consumer. This is not an employer-employee issue,
right,
where we're talking about accommodating, making reasonable accommodations for the employee who has a qualified disability in the workplace so that they can perform the essential.
So this is consumer-facing.
This is a consumer thing, and as a matter of fact, and it's public record without getting into the names specifically, but... there is a former NFL player who goes around Broward and Palm Beach County. He's probably, in the last year, filed about 100 of these lawsuits. He walks in. He appears to be able-bodied, though sometimes disabilities are not evident to the eye, physical disabilities. And he'll say, or she'll say, so I'm not, well, I'm going to just say NFL, so we can go with
yeah,
D.
Yeah, start to say.
Yeah.
We're good.
I'm not outing anyone
That's
specifically.
That's some beard you got there.
Yeah.
Which bathroom, Charles?
Yeah, exactly. Well, this is a bathroom.
Yeah, that's deplorable.
This is a bathroom story.
That's one.
And he'll say, may I use your bathroom? And then he'll go into the bathroom, and he'll take out a ruler or a tape measure, and he'll measure the height of the sink. He'll measure the distance, how high the toilet paper roll dispenser is, where the paper towels is, the angle of the mirror. And then he'll leave, say, thank you very much. I've decided I don't need to buy anything from you, but thank you. He'll leave. He'll go to his ADA attorney. And the next thing you know, and he'll do this from business to business to business. So they'll focus oftentimes on geographic
They'll pick
areas.
A block or two and just work the block.
And just work the block.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that is deplorable. And does this person have a disability?
Well, you almost have to take at face value that there's a disability. And typically, and by the way, most of these cases get settled quickly because the cost of defending them is high. The reality is that there probably is some technical violation of the law where the toilet seat's too high or too low. So there are these technical violations. And of course, like we talked about the Fair Labor Standards Act on these overtime cases, guess what? These cases, too, are driven by an attorney's fee provision.
Heads I win, tails you lose.
Correct.
But here's my question. Look, these laws are very important because people with true disabilities, do need accommodations so they can live similar to the rest of us. But I've been hearing stories like this, and true stories like this, for as long as I've been practicing law. So why... So why is it that the law hasn't changed? I mean, obviously this law does a lot of good, but it's also subject to abuse. It seems like something that can be fixed, no?
It is. I mean, it is subject to abuse. And look, I don't mean to, minimize the impact. There are legitimate lawsuits.
No one's saying that.
By people who are disabled that need to have accommodations.
This sounds like obvious abuse. It
sounds like this does the opposite. This is going to drive people away from
accommodating. Let me jump in here for a minute. What offends me is when you see 62 cases filed on Monday, all by the same lawyer with the same plaintiff who just happened to be in 62 places of business and was discriminated against at every place. I mean, it's amazing. Come on, man.
There are these serial filers,
right,
and they are taking advantage of a system that allows for injunctive relief, meaning the business is forced to make the changes, and then there's the attorney's fee to the attorney for the alleged disabled individual who brought the claim. And so... a lot of it, as I'm sure we all know, and this is not a political show, but a lot of this is, at the pendulum swinging based on who the current administration is. And, these are laws that were passed initially by George Bush Senior.
Well, the laws are important. You know, this injunctive change to make the access for the disabled people. It's the abuse that needs. So you don't throw out the baby with the bathwater, right?
Right, and that's something where you hope that over time there are amendments made to the law that balance it a little bit better.
And but is there anything going on to have that happen? I mean, I can't believe I'm still hearing stories.
The problem is it's not sympathetic.
It's not. And just like, you know, under President Obama with the overtime issues, right? A fair day's pay for a fair day's work. And listen, let's all be, we're all grown-ups here, right? So let's be understanding of this. Well, some of us are grown-ups.
All right,
Damien, take a break. Okay. So the reality is, though, that the government has a vested interest in these cases because, for example, with overtime cases and with misclassification of workers as independent contractors, while the government is looking out for the employee, fair day's pay for a fair day's work, the government's losing money on the table if they're not collecting taxes on that money. So there's a vested interest all around.
Well, that's the problem. The government shouldn't be losing anything, you know, because they don't have a vested interest in making more money to spend. They have a vested interest in doing what they're supposed to do and making sure employers and employees have a level playing field.
You're speaking theoretically.
But if I get a 1099, I'm actually paying more taxes than the employer does with my help.
Well, you're supposed
to pay. So the government shouldn't be losing a dime, you know, but I agree.
Fix all that with a flat tax anyway.
Yeah, right?
I agree.
I'm all
about
that.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. So, I mean, but those are issues.
But what's an employer to do about that, a business owner? I mean, if you're renting a space or you own a space and it's not compliant, I mean, is everyone supposed to hear the show and rush to Home Depot?
I mean, look, it depends on your philosophy. There are some employers and some businesses that say, I may or may not be in compliance, but I'm just not going to spend the money now and worry about it. And if I get tagged, then I'll hire somebody like me, and
but you're talking
I'll deal
huge
with it.
Money Alan if they get
I'll hire Alan Dan.
But that's huge money now.
New sponsor of the show, Home Depot.
It could be. So it's always that same thing, Gary, right? Pay me now or pay me later.
Yeah.
So it's always
small.
Cheap.
But how much does it cost if you get tagged with one of these suits? Not a real suit, one of these more serial suits.
It's
how much
is
that going to cost
suit.
You?
Well, you know, you're talking about on the ADA stuff.
Yeah.
Well, it really depends. It depends on the number of violations because the first thing that business owner has to do is go in there and fix the technical violations, revamp the bathroom, revamp the entranceway, put sidewalk cuts in for somebody in a wheelchair. So that runs the gamut of what it could be. It could be very, very expensive, or it can be minimal. Most cases that I've had tend to be minimal, maybe because I try to limit the exposure, but they tend to be more minimal. When I say minimal, it's still thousands of dollars, but not hundreds of thousands.
And how much
of dollars.
Is the plaintiff's attorney getting?
They're going to get what I can negotiate it down to is what they're going to get. So
that's,
I mean, they're
very
gonna,
good, Alan.
Right? I mean, they're going to want whatever, and then, you know, it's all you negotiate that to what you think is fair.
So this attorney representing all these cases is just milking it.
Well, not necessarily. Look, there's definitely two sides to this coin, but I think we're kind of running out of time here for our show, believe it or not. So, Alan, how do people call you?
People can call me. This is my time for self-promotion?
Yes. Yeah, real quick, though.
All right, sure. Well, anybody can reach me either on my office phone, which is 954-530-9245. They're welcome to visit my website, dans@danslaw.net, and they can learn all about me and my past.
Perfect. And Charles, real quick, phone number?
954-572-7200.
And Gary Singer at 954-851-1448. As always, folks, it went too quick. I want to thank you very much for tuning into the Broward Bar's Florida Law Talk, and have a great week.
Thank you for listening to Florida Law Talk, a service of the Broward County Bar Association. With over 3,200 members, we can connect you with an attorney to meet your every need. To get more information, go to browardbar.org. Or better yet, call 954-764-8310. That's 954-764-8310 to get connected to the legal advice you're looking for. And tune in again next time for more Florida Law Talk.
The opinions expressed on the preceding sponsored program were strictly those of its hosts, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of this station, its staff, management, or sponsors.